present with us this morning. We're glad to see everybody, and I know that we have several visitors in the audience, so we're glad you're here. Thank you for coming, and I hope we make you feel welcome. I hope you'll want to come back and be with us again. If you haven't filled out a visitor's card, you should be able to find one just in front of you, and we'd like for you to fill that out for us if you don't mind. We would appreciate that. I got a couple of announcements that I want to make before I actually get into the lesson. I'll try to do this quickly. I inadvertently left out the sick updates for this week in the bulletin. So let me make mention that TJ and Amelia were sick last week, but they're back with us, and that's good. Alethea was sick last Sunday morning, and she was feeling better by the evening, so we're glad for that. But also remember that Mary Fassett asked for prayers for her niece Joyce, who had a stroke. So if you would, please remember that. Tonight in the lesson, if you've been able to come out with us on Sunday evenings, and by the way, the attendance, if you've noticed up here, on Sunday evening and Wednesday evening both have been up over the past several weeks, couple, 3 months, and that's really good. So if you're coming out on those at those times, thank you for that, and we'd like to encourage you to keep doing that. Tonight, if you want to take part in the lesson, and the reason I say that is because I've been doing a series on people in the Bible that may be considered to be in hopeless situations, but obviously they are not. And tonight we're going to look at Nicodemus. So you may be thinking about Nicodemus this afternoon. If you've got a question or a comment you'd like to make about that, I'm encouraging that. So Nicodemus this evening at 6 o'clock. Without any further delay, let's get into the lesson, which is to say, let's get back into this lesson we were looking at a couple of weeks ago. And you may remember I said that we would come back and do a second part of this where we're talking about the godly child as we fulfill our purpose in our home. All of us start out, obviously, as children. And what does it mean to be a godly child in my home? You may remember that I started out by pointing out that children have what I would divide into three very basic, natural responsibilities as they grow up in a home. And I'm not going to spend very long at this, but remember these three were that they are to obey and respect their parents or those in authority, and those are the first figures of authority that they know, and ultimately they are learning to obey and respect God's authority. Secondly, they are to grow in wisdom and knowledge. I mean, that's the responsibility of a child. The Bible teaches us of John the Baptist and Jesus and points out especially that they matured and they grew in wisdom and knowledge. Ultimately, a child is growing and learns to grow in the wisdom and knowledge of the Lord, and that should be the natural progression for the child. And finally, there's to be a transition. I'm going to spend a little time this morning talking about this, but there's to be a transition from childhood, which is a time of immaturity, naturally so, but there's to be a transition to adulthood, which should be a time of maturity. Now, that doesn't always follow. And there are a lot of immature adults running around, and we all know that. But there should be this transition. And ultimately, that is teaching us the pattern of one day being born again spiritually and maturing spiritually. So you can see a parallel as children grow up physically, a parallel to the idea of the spiritual rebirth and growth that should be the case for all of us as Christians. Now let's go a little further with that. We said last time, a couple of weeks ago, that all children are uniquely blessed. And I believe this. Every child is different. Any parent understands that. If you have several children, you certainly are well aware of that. But each of us, as individuals, and that includes children, we have our strengths. We have our intellect. We have a different set of abilities and talents. We are unique individuals. And with the proper nurturing and the proper admonition from parents, then your potential as a child is going to be fully realized so that you can fulfill your purpose in life. Now, that doesn't mean it can't happen if you don't have that nurturing and admonition, but it will mean it will have to take place in spite of the lack of upbringing that you had. And so what that says to us is that parents have to realize an awesome responsibility in nurturing and admonishing a child, in training them up in the way they should go, in bringing them up or raising their children. There's an awesome responsibility. And you children, and I'm addressing you this morning, children have to recognize their awesome responsibility toward their parents. Because it's very hard. And the older a child gets, in that period from the time they're born to, say, they reach the end of their teenage years, that is a very difficult time in our lives. A lot of things are shaped, a lot of things are formed, a lot of things are founded, and there's an awesome responsibility of parents to bring out the best in a child. But there is equally an awesome responsibility in a child to respond to their parents. And so it becomes a struggle in many cases, and it becomes a difficult thing for most people. And nonetheless, it is what God has designed and is the way things should be. Now, let's point out a few things. We started out by saying, the Bible tells children very simply, obey your parents. Tyler just read this for us a moment ago. Obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And we understand that there is to be discipline on the part of parents. Now, when I say discipline, I don't just mean, you know, punishing a child. That's part of it. There has to be training. There has to be education. There has to be correction of children. Montel and I went out on a date last night. And when we were finished at the restaurant, we went by, and I'm sure many of you have done this, we went by the memorial over here on Eagle Rock Mountain. It's a memorial to what happened on September 11th of 2001. If you haven't been there, I'd encourage you to go. It's just not far from here up on the mountain. But we were noticing as we were walking around, reading the various things there again and so forth, we were noticing that there was a father and a son. The son was asking questions. He must have been somewhere around 8 to 10 years old, maybe. But he was asking these questions, and the father was answering the questions. And I said to Montel, and I was just taking notice of the fact, I said, you know, that child would not even have been born when that happened. And that's really an amazing thing, because it doesn't seem for some of us that long ago. But I was noticing as the child asked the questions, and as the father answered the questions, and sometimes the child would say something, and it wasn't right, and the father would correct it. And I said to Montel, that's exactly the way it's supposed to be. Because that's our responsibility as parents. We know things that children do not know. We've lived time they have not lived. We understand things they don't understand. And it becomes our responsibility to forge a relationship with that child in such a way, as parent and child, and as the child grows, in such a way that we're able to train them, to educate them, and yes, to correct them. And children have to understand it is their responsibility, their position. They are put there by God to learn and to be corrected. And there should be an admonition, which is a rebuke or a warning, where you call attention to things. And you know, a lot of times children see this as nagging. You're always on me. You're always telling me what to do. You're always riding me. And the older a child gets, the more they feel that way, but understand that there has to be a fair amount of warning the child of what things lead to, of the dangers involved. Now, I don't know all the conversation that took place yesterday between that father and son. But I know that those of us that are older understand certain things that lead to that kind of thing. I do know that son asked his father at one point, why? As all children will. There are a lot of answers to the why. But it becomes the responsibility of a parent to point things out to the child. You do this, and this is what it leads to. If people do this, this is what it leads to. And children need to listen to that, because parents know. A second thing that godly children do is they honor their parents. When you look at Ephesians chapter 6 and verses 2 and 3, it points that out. Children, honor your father and your mother. And it gives gives you a promise. And in fact, it makes mention of the fact that this honor, which means, and the word means, to place a value on. Now, I'm not sure that all children see their parents as valuable. Maybe they see them as necessary evils. But I'm not sure they see them as valuable. But the older you get, if you have good parents, the more you learn to prize them and to revere them for their value. And sadly enough, too many of us realize that when they're at the end of their lives, when we wish we could have more time with them. And that time is fading away. But the idea of respect your parents, there's a benefit to it. I'm not going to go back through this, I did last time. But that life will go well and that you'll have a good long life. Children owe that honor to their parents. And I'm going to say it like this. They owe it throughout the life of their parents. Just because my parents are around 80 years old, you know, give or take a year or two for one or the other of them, doesn't mean that it is time for me to stop honoring them. No, that honor may change. The respect I give them may change. I relate to my father now as a middle-aged individual where once I related to him as a little child. It's different. But the respect, the honor, the value that I place on him doesn't change. I forget that from time to time. And I pause to remember that. And I take time to remember that because God commands it of me. There are a lot of reasons for a lot of people, for a lot of us. Perhaps for many of you in this room, there are reasons for you to look at your parents, reasons you can find not to honor them or respect them. Well, they didn't do this or they didn't do that. And I understand that. Believe me, I understand that. And yet, God is commanding it. And God is teaching us that that honor, though it changes over time, it needs to be present. You know, we were talking about honor and respect at Wendy's the other night. And we were talking about the position, the office of certain individuals. And how you respect that, you honor that for the position, for the office. Well, there's no difference in that in your parents. Your parents are in a position to be honored. If someone has done the job of mom and dad, they've done a lot. And you may be young enough in this room right now to not really understand all of that. To not really understand what you owe them. But you will. And someday you will get older and you will realize just how much value should be placed upon the sacrifices that they make for you. The time they give to you. You know, if you do the job of a parent, children, I want you to understand this. All of you young people here. Because I know the older ones do. If you have parents that are doing their job, it is costing them. And it's costing them part of their life. They could be selfish, and they could be out there doing for themselves, but they're giving their life to you. Honor them for that. Godly children, listen to their parents. That's a basic responsibility. I want you to turn back with me, and I'm going to spend a few minutes here this morning in the remainder of the lesson in the book of Proverbs. I'm not going to by any means look at everything in Proverbs. It would take us all day, and we would just barely scrape the surface. But I do want to point out a few verses, because the Proverbs often remind children to listen to their parents. In fact, if you read through the book, you may be surprised at how many times and how much of the book is consumed with just saying, hey kids, listen to mom and dad. And it tells you again and again and in many different ways, and the reason it is doing that is because it is so important. They are relating, if they're doing their job, they're relating to you the wisdom that comes directly from God. For example, look at Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 8. And incidentally, we have just gotten into a study of Proverbs at Wendy's. Wes is teaching this and he's doing a fantastic job. So every other Thursday, we're looking at Proverbs, and you're welcome to come down and join us if you'd like to do that. But notice in the very beginning of the book, Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 8, Solomon in this case is the father. And he starts off by saying, "My son, hear the instruction of your father, and forsake not the law of your mother." And he's just telling him from the very beginning. And he goes on to give him reasons why. You listen to mom and dad, because if you don't, if you listen to your friends, a lot of times they're going to get you into a whole bunch of trouble. So listen to mom and dad. Notice as he goes on in the book, and let's just look at a couple of others. Look at chapter 3 and down in verse 21. Proverbs 3, verse 21. "My son, let not them..." Now, if you go back, you see a lot of principles. Like, for example, in verse 9. "Honor the Lord with your substance and with the first fruits of your increase." They're just principles like that. Give to God first. And basically what it goes on to say... excuse me, I may do a lot of that this morning. But it goes on to say, if you give to God first, if that's the way you live your life, then you're going to benefit from that. You're never going to lack. You're never going to want in life. It is a lot of principles like that. And then he will come to the point in verse 21 of saying, "My son, let them," these principles, "let them not depart from your eyes. Keep sound wisdom," notice, "and discretion." What is discretion? Just good sense. In other words, when your parents are warning you, go back to that whole admonition idea. They're telling you what things lead to. They're pointing out to you the dangers in something. They're talking about those things. A lot of you came up to me and talked to me about my little excursion to Namie's Corner Grocery Store. Remember that? Got on my little red bicycle and truck down there. Got a Reese's cup, put it on account. Remember that? And some of you were talking about that, and you were talking about how I noticed later a car, you know, speeding by. Montel and I actually noticed one last night doing the exact same thing. And I thought about that. But how your parents stand over you, nagging you, right? Riding you. Don't cross the street. Don't ever go out into the street. And you're looking out there and it's just as peaceful as it can be. But that one time, when that car comes by so quickly that you would never have noticed it, when a guy like he did last night, I guess in his brand new sports car, came down here to this end of the street, did a U-turn, and gunned it. And I can just imagine a little 3 or 4 year old, about 6 houses down, that decides that's the moment they're going to run out into the street after a ball. Guy would have never been able to stop. And that's why they tell you that. Parents are pointing out to you principle. Look both ways before you cross the street. How many of us had that drilled in us until we could, you know? Why do you do that? Why does it bother you if you ever start to cross a street at 55 years old and you don't look both ways? Because mom and dad drilled that. Somebody drilled it into your head so you could never forget it. And you think about the danger. You smile a little bit and you realize you learned valuable things. My son, don't let these principles depart from your eyes. Keep the sound wisdom and the discretion, the good sense. Notice as he goes on here. So shall they be life unto thy soul. Grace or favor to thy neck. The idea, as Wes has pointed out to us often in this study, of how it's just an ornament to you. It dresses you up. It makes you look good in life. If you listen and you hold on, then shall you walk in your way safely, and your foot will not stumble. When you lie down, you will not be afraid. You realize that the idea of panic in this country is reaching an epidemic proportion? I was listening to some psychologists talk about this. I don't know when it was, a few days ago, a week or whatever it was. But talking about how so many people in this country literally cannot sleep. Because when they try to sleep, they panic. They can't shut it off. They can't stop it. They can't stop thinking about all the mistakes, all the problems, all the horror of their life. And so it's just draining the life out of them because they just can't sleep. They've got to have professional help. And what the father is saying to the son is, son, I'm teaching you things right now. And if you'll just listen, you'll hold on to these things, there'll come a day when you'll be able, unlike everybody around you, to lay down and go to sleep. And what a wonderful blessing that will be. You won't have to worry and panic and wonder what's going to happen because you live your life in such a way there's no need for all of that. Notice as the book goes on, another thing that it points out in chapter 6, and I really love this one. My son, keep your father's commandment. Forsake not the law of your mother. How simple that is. What he's saying to his son, and you'll notice how many times just by chapter 6, he's repeated this. Why is he saying again and again and again to this boy? If you read the context and you go on to read it, he will talk about the fact that there's going to come a time when there's going to be a woman that's going to walk up to you. And she's going to try to lead you down a certain path. And you don't want to go there. You may think you do. The lust, the passions may get exciting. You know, they may start rising up in you. And you think that's the way you want to go. But you don't want to go that way. I wonder sometimes how old Solomon was when he wrote this. I wonder sometimes how much of that was already stirring within him. He knew. And he was trying to protect his son from going down that path. Son, your father's commanding you, telling you to do things, not just because he wants to be mean, not just because he wants to be overbearing, not just because he wants to be so restrictive that every kid around you points a finger at you and laughs at you because your father is so strict. He's telling you because he wants you to have a good life. Listen to your parents. Your mother gives you a law. It's a law. Obey what she says. Listen. And your life will be so much better. Notice as he goes on here, we look at chapter 13, a few pages over. He starts off with verse 1, and now it's kind of progressing. And he's telling you, you are this kind of person if a wise son hears his father's instruction. Notice, but a scorner, a mocker, hears not rebuke. Now I take this to be an older child. This is not your three-year-old that you tell to do what, you know, do this. And the three-year-old, well, you've already taught him by 3 years old, hey, if I don't do this, my hand's going to get slapped. Or I can't do this or I can't do that. They're already understanding that, or they're not by 3 years old. But you get older as a child. And you reach those difficult years. You know, when you start hitting teenage years and all of that. When your parents suddenly do not know anything, but you know better, and your friends know better. A wise son hears his father's instruction, but a mocker, a scorner, just doesn't even hear the rebuke. Now this is when I've told you as a parent what to do, and you haven't done it, or you're not listening, and I rebuke you. I tell you you're wrong, and I tell you why you're wrong, and you either listen to that because you're wise, or you shake your head and go off and tell your friends how ridiculous your parents are and you don't listen. And you pay the consequences. Because you will. I've been that child. I've been that child and broken the heart of people who loved me and told me what was right. Who warned me exactly what it was going to lead to, and I went out and did it anyway, and I paid the consequences. I've been that child. Don't be stupid like me. Listen to your parents. Don't make the mistakes. Live the better life. Don't go through your life, even 37, 38 years after you obey the gospel, don't have times in your life where you have to look back and regret. Listen to your parents. Look at chapter 29. I'll skip a whole lot. You might want to read the book of Proverbs. But look at chapter 29. And go down with me to about verse 15. Now, there are a lot of verses in this book about punishing children. And I'm not going to make any apologies. I believe very strongly in punishing children. I believe very strongly in punishing them early and often. And in fact, I'll tell you a quick little blurb. When I first started preaching, I was reading things, and I wanted to read things by older preachers. I just wanted to see what these guys, especially successful preachers. So if any of you around here know Gardner Hall, I was reading an article by not his father, Sewell, but his father. In other words, Gardner's grandfather. He was telling the story of how, when he was preaching, a woman came up to him and she said, "Brother Hall," she said, "my son is 3 years old. When should I start disciplining him?" And Brother Hall said, "You're 3 years too late. Punish them early, punish them often. And generally speaking, by the time they're 6, 7 years old, you won't have to punish them very much. The rod and reproof give wisdom." Now notice that. That's interesting, isn't it? It doesn't just break them. It doesn't just break their will and all of the things that so many experts would tell us. No, it gives wisdom. It makes them think, is the idea. I wonder how many children, having just been spanked or punished or whatever, have sat alone in a room and had to think. And after they got over perhaps being angry, perhaps being hurt, you know, it stings, that they thought about the reason why. The rod and reproof give wisdom. But notice this. But a child left to himself brings his mother to shame. Those of you that are parents, you want to spend the last years of your life in shame and grief, then steal the time from your children that they need right now. Give it to yourself. Have everything you want to have because of the time you take. And watch the destruction of your children because of it. And children, if you want your life to fall apart, refuse the rod, the reproof, the correction, all that nagging, all that riding, all those things those parents say that you just want to roll your eyes and say, "Man, enough already." Don't listen. And your life will fall apart. One final passage. Chapter 30. Right here, we're right here at it. Verse 17. The eye that mocks at his father. You know, we're talking about rolling the eyes, thinking how stupid mom and dad are and all of that. The eye that mocks at his father and despises to obey his mother. That's the idea of just disregarding. I'm not going to listen to it. I know what they would say. I don't care. I'm not listening. Notice, the ravens of the valley shall pick it out. Now that's graphic. And it's talking about a bird coming and eating your eye out of your head. It's proverbial, obviously. And the young eagle shall eat it. And what he's saying is this. If you don't listen, you die. And I'm not saying that's an absolute. I'm not saying that there aren't children here who do not have parents they should have, who can't find their way to the truth. You can. But it won't happen often. And it will happen with great difficulty. What I'm saying to you in simple terms so that you can understand it, if you're here and you're young, is if you don't listen to your parents, you're going to have a hard life. And if you don't have parents that take the time to teach you, find it somewhere. Because you're going to suffer if you don't. It's going to be a hard, hard life. You can trust me. I know. There's got to be that transition. I'm going to mention this quickly. I talked about it a little bit last time, but I am going to mention it. Chapter 22 and verse 6. Train up a child when he in the way he should go, And when he is old, he will not depart from it. There's got to be a transition. Children have to become adults. They have to grow up. They have to learn to make good decisions. They have to be prepared to make those good decisions on their own. You can't be there with them and lead them by the hand forever. You can when they're 2 years old, but someday they're going to be 20. And they're going to have to make those decisions. And parents, the hardest job in the world is facilitating the transition where they go from being the little child that you tell them every move to make to being the adult where they tell themselves every move to make. And you've got a job in that. But it's a job of bringing them from the one to the other, and I consider it to be one of the most difficult things on earth. And you know, children, it's natural. They want to grow up too fast. And the parents are constantly saying to the kid, you want to grow up too fast. You're trying to grow up too fast. And if the child tries to grow up too fast, it leads to rebellion. I'm going to do what I want to do, and I don't care what they say. You need to care. They know. Listen to them. But on the other hand, the parents can be equally wrong, equally at fault, because they want to keep them from growing up. They have to grow up. They can't be two forever. That's just, we would like for that, you know. I love little kids. One of my most favorite things in the world is to sit down in a rocking chair, rock them, feed them, all that, you know, kiss their little head. And by the way, don't bring your children to me. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But I love that. I really do. And the idea of a child staying a little child forever, you know, I understand the desire for that, but they've got to grow up. You can't keep them from growing up. And you can't keep them from taking their place as an adult. You've got to help them do that. And children, you've got to be willing to be helped. It's a difficult time in life. A very difficult time. But it's something that both parent and child have to realize. And I'll tell you, I don't know all the answers by any means. But I do know that what the book of Proverbs is a father talking to his son. And one of the greatest helps there is in achieving this is instead of fighting all the time, talk. Have some discussions. Listen. Both sides. Listen. Talk it out. If you're here this morning and you're not a child of God, I hope that you want to be a child of God. That you believe in Jesus. And you believe in Him to the point that you'll accept Him and confess Him that He is Lord, the Son of God. And that you're willing this morning to live your life for Him. Some changes you'll have to make, sure. But you want to live your life for the Lord. And be baptized for forgiveness of all your sins. Have them washed away so that even though you might look back with regret on some things, you'll take comfort in the fact that the Lord's blood washed them away. Maybe you're here today and you are a Christian. But you look at your life and you say, I need to do better. And I want to ask for the people here to pray for me. If you need to come, won't you please come while Greg leads us in this song.